Tonight's shiur in Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov Avinu says, Katonti mikol hachasadim. It's a story of how one has to appreciate all the chasadim of Hashem. It's told over by Rav Emanuel Ravid. He's a Yid that lived in Petach Tikva, and the story concerns his cousin. His cousin was an officer in the French army during the Second World War, and he was taken captive as a prisoner of war by the Germans, and he was sent to England as a prisoner. And he was a very, very chashev officer, this his cousin, in the French army, to such a degree that the president of France in those days, Charles de Gaulle, right, held him in such high esteem that he himself gave him medals of honor. And when he heard that this Yid was taken captive, he himself took a trip to England, and he got permission to go on the radio in England, and he announced that he knows that his friend, you know, this officer, is captured by the Germans. And he warned the Germans on air, you know, he spoke to the radio, he warned them on air that if they kill this, his officer, then he is gonna have it that every single German POW is gonna be killed as well. So they heard that and they decided they weren't gonna kill him. However, they didn't want to kill him, but they said that, we're not gonna kill him, but we'll treat him with, in a very degrading way. That we are allowed to do, quote unquote. So what did the Germans do? They built a glass cage and they put him in there in the middle of the camp where he was held captive so everybody could see him. Meaning his whole, everything he did, they were looking at him when he had to go to the bathroom, when he had to, whatever he had to do, everybody was like watching him the whole time. And it was a very, you know, very degrading, disgraceful. But that's they're sick minds. That's what they did. Anyways, so this man, he recalls, he's now like in his 80s, if he's still alive at this point. But he says that what happened, he said they also, when it came to food, they didn't give him much food. They just gave him a piece of bread. And even then, they didn't just like regularly give him his ration. They also made sure he got really, really hungry, starving. And then they only gave him a piece of bread. And so, you know, they made him like suffer. So he recalls, he said that not only that, the German Nazi that would give him his bread, he said he, before he gave it to him, he would do three things. First, he would take this tiny slice of bread. He would take the bread and spit on it on all sides. Then the second thing he did, he threw it on the floor in the dirt, in the mud. And lastly, he would stamp on it with his Gestapo boots. And only then he would give that piece of bread to him and throw it at him and say, "Here, you dirty Jew," and throw to him his whole piece of bread. So that's how he used to be fed. Anyway, so his cousin asked him a question, you know, now recently. He said, "What would you do?" He said, "If you would bump into this Nazi that, you know, gave you your daily bread like that, if you bumped into him now, what would you do to him?" So he said, "What would I do to him?" He says, "I'd kiss him." He says, "What?" He said, "You'd kiss him?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "How could you kiss him after what he did?" He said, "What do you mean what he did?" He says, "Thank you, thanks to him, I'm alive. He gave me my daily bread ration." He says, I have to be thankful, because of him I'm alive today. So he said, that's a Yid, that he appreciates. Katonti mikol hachasadim. So the lesson of the moral of the story that we could take is that we should appreciate our bread when we eat it. We get our scrumptious challah on Shabbos, it isn't stepped on and spat on and on the floor and stepped. No, it's a nice, clean, big piece of challah. We have to appreciate it. We take things for granted. Imagine what this Yid went through We should also feel katonti mikol hachasadim. It's an interesting shaila that came up. It was on the pasuk Mincha Hishlucha. There is department store, a large department store, and the people were lined up at the cash register to pay. So one of the guys in line, he wasn't feeling well, so he was sick, whatever it might be, and he started coughing. And it got stronger and stronger, and he was coughing and coughing, and he's coughing all his spit, his mucus, whatever was going on the people in front of him or whatever. It was really gross. So the guy behind him in line says to the guy, "Excuse me, sir, you know, with all due respect, I mean, you know, this is you have to control yourself. It's terrible. You're coughing on everybody here, and you know." So he said, "I know, I'm sorry, you know, whatever." But he keeps coughing. So he approaches the guy. He says, "Really not right." He says, "Your germs are going on. Either people can catch your sickness, whatever it is, and it's not right. It's probably not right." So he saw that this guy was, you know, making a lot of sense, and he said, "Okay," and he left the line, you know, the line to the cash register, and just kept coughing and away at least from everybody. Okay. So the person that was behind him in line obviously took his place, you know, who's next. And then he was cashing out at the cash register, this guy that was behind him. And as soon as he finishes cashing out, all of a sudden they hear music in the store, and the manager of the store walks up with the video cameras and regular cameras and that whole fanfare. So what happened? They come up to this guy, this cashed out, and he said, "Congratulations, sir, you are 1 millionth customer in our store." And they go, "Thing," and he hands him an envelope with a gift certificate from the store worth 10,000 shekels. 10,000 shekels. So the guy, "Oh wow, it's amazing, oh wow." So what happened? The guy that was coughing stop coughing now, and he's like, "What? You're gonna believe it?" Because he took his turn, right? He only left line. And that guy told him to leave the line, and had he stayed in line, that would have been him, and he would have had the 10,000 shekels. So he came. He said, "It's not fair. You know, I deserve it. It was me. You told me to leave the line. Thank you." Anyway, so the shaila came up. Who was right? Is the guy that was coughing right because he was deserving of it, or the guy that sent him out of line? So it seems to be that all the poskim side with the one that received the 10,000 he was coming to, and not to the guy that was coughing. Why? So a couple of different approaches. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said that if the guy behind him chased him out of the line for no good reason, okay, that'd be a different shot. But he had to leave the line. It was not right for him. It was asur for him to stay in line and cough on everybody. So therefore, he left the line because he had to leave the line. So maybe the guy that took his place deserves the money. No chaims. But Nissen Karelis, he takes a different approach. And something we've said, I think, in a shir not too long ago, even brings the same little maisa, which we'll go over very quickly. But he says the vort, the Chafetz Chaim used to say, and that is that tickets don't win, people win. In other words, it's Hashem wanted, obviously, this guy to get a 10,000, so how did he do it? Hashem made this guy cough all over the place, that he'd have to leave the line, so the guy deserves the money, get the money. In other words, it's people that are zocher, not things, not tickets, not anything, it's the person. We've said, I think, the Maisa before. Say quickly this person that bought a lottery ticket, and he hosted this Talmud Chacham one night in his home, who also had a lottery ticket, and he started thinking to himself, he goes, "You know, he's a Talmud Chacham, I'm a person, you know, he's probably going to win, not me." And he switched the tickets, and when he was sleeping. And in the end, what happened? The Talmud Chacham won with his ticket. So he started saying, "No, it was my ticket, it fell out of my pocket into your pocket," whatever, he tried to get out of it. And you know, they asked them, they brought the Shaila to the Chafetz Chaim at the time, and the Chafetz Chaim said this word. He says, it's not the ticket that wins, it's people win. You know, Hashem wanted that this Talmud Chacham should win, so, but he didn't have the winning ticket. The other guy did. So Hashem put it in his mind and he's going to switch his tickets in order to, it's not the ticket that wins the person. So maybe the same thing over here. It's the person who they won. It was obviously meant for him to win and not the guy that was coughing. Okay, it says in the Pasuk Vayigach B'chaf Yerech B'teika Kaf Yerech Yaakov, the angel hit the thigh of Yaakovinu, etc. So the Chafetz Chaim brings the Zohar Kadosh that says that the Kaf Yerech, the thigh of Yaakov, refers to the Tamchin Deraisa, those that support Torah. It's like the legs support a person, so it's a remiss to those that support Torah. The Yaakov was the with the Amud Torah. So there was a Din Torah that went the following way. Interesting. There was a wealthy man, and he approached a certain Yid, and he said, listen, I want to do a little business deal with you. He says, I'll give you a million shekels, and I want you to do business with him. Buy things, sell things, whatever, and then we'll split the profits. I don't have time to deal with it, so I'll give you the money, and you do the business. And so, fine. He accepted the offer, took the million shekels. So this was just it was about Rosh Chodesh Nisan time, and he had an idea. He said, the guy gave me a million shekels. So, what did he do? He took a tenth of it, 100,000 shekels, and he approached a Talmud Chacham, which he knew, and he said, I'd like to form a pre-Pesach Kolel. It's Bein Hazmanim, Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So, I have here 100,000 shekels I'm giving to you. I want you to find yourself 100 Avrichim that'll learn from Rosh Chodesh Nisan to before Pesach, and 100 Avrichim, give him each 1,000 shekels, 100,000 shekels. Here's 100,000 shekels. Fine, so he started, he rounded up his 100 avrechim, and then, they were learned for 1,000 shekels for the time period, fine. In the meantime, after this, the rich man who gave the million shekels got word of this. So he approached the person that gave him that gave the money to him, he said, what did you do? So he said, what do you mean? I got a nice kolel started, I get bracha for our business, and I pay. He says, excuse me, I didn't give you this money to start giving it out to kolel people. It's very nice, but that's, I gave you to buy things and sell things, not to give tzedaka with. What are you doing? So he says, well, I thought it would be a good thing, big kiddush Hashem to do with the money, and, see bracha with the money, whatever. Anyways, they brought the shaila to Zilberstein to say who's right over here. So Zilberstein said a letter should be written and given out to the Avrechim, the 100 Avrechim that we're learning, telling them that it's forbidden to use any of this money that they got. They have to return it because the money is gezel. So the Yid, that received the money, is like, well, what, gezel? Like, well, what's going on? What do you mean gezel? So he says, yeah. They said, why? It was a big Kiddush Hashem. So he said, listen. He says, you want to do a Kiddush Hashem? You can do as much Kiddush Hashem you want with your own money. Okay? It's not somebody gives you money to do business with. You don't take some of the money and do a Kiddush Hashem with. Not your money. He didn't give me the money. He didn't give it to stock. It's been nice mitzvah and everything, but that's not what he gave it for. So with your money, you can do what you want, not with somebody else's money. And he brought a raya from Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishmat Siman Kuf Pei Gimel. Says the following, mamish this idea in the tour. The tour says, brings a case of somebody found a lost object, money, whatever, that belonged to a goy. So the din is, halacha is, you're allowed to keep a lost object of a goy. So this yid, found this goy's money, he goes, oh wow, great, I get to keep this money. And what did he do? He gave it to another yid just for safekeeping, don't want to. So this other yid said, you know what? I'm going to do a big Kiddush Hashem. I'm going to take this money and give it back to the goy. You know, because you can keep the money, but you don't have to. You can return it, and it's even brought down. You can say Kiddush Hashem. You can make it be Kiddush Hashem. It's an Indian to give it back to the goy, and the goy will say, "Wow, look at these Jews! They give back money. You know, unbelievable." You can do it be Kiddush Hashem. You're allowed to do. You know, you're allowed to. So this second year, they got the money. Said, "I'm going to do it be Kiddush Hashem. I'm going to give back the money back to the goy that lost it," which he did. So the Torah says, what's the din over here? He said, that's the totally usher to do. He said, why? He never says that idea. He says, it's a Kiddush Hashem. He says, you want to do a Kiddush Hashem? Do a Kiddush Hashem with your own money, not somebody else's money. This guy found the money from a goy. He's allowed to keep it. He gives it to you. You have no right to go make a Kiddush Hashem with it. So, Mela says, it's the same thing over here with the person that got the money from the gvir. You know, you want to make a Hashem, I make a kolel before Pesach. It's your own money, no one's you. Okay. But then, another shaila came up. Second stage of the story. What happened? So fine. So as it happened, he hadn't yet given out all the money. There was 100,000 shekels. 30,000 he already paid out. But he didn't yet give out the rest, the 70,000, which is owed to the, Abraham to learn, but he didn't yet happen to not give it all out yet. He only gave out 30 out of the 100,000. So, now what does he have to do? Well, he's got the 70,000 he has in his hands. Okay, he can give it back now to the gvir or whatever he wants, return it. But now he owes also another 30,000 to the gvir. And he owes all the Avreichim though, because he promised them to give him each, $1,000, 1,000 shekel. Anyway, so basically he had to make himself 100,000 shekels to, pay back all the money. So he said, okay, I'll go fundraise. So what happened? The shaila was, let's say he comes back short. He comes back, he doesn't have enough money to pay everybody. So what takes preference? Is it take preference to pay the avrichim that haven't gotten paid, or paid yet? Or does he have to pay the rich man back his money? And that's the shaila. So the answer that he was given was based on a similar shaila, that was in the Eitz Chaim institutions, Yerushalayim, that many years ago, that they had a mashulach that used to go raise money to pay for there was a whole institution there, they had a kolol, they had a cheder, and so he used to raise money to pay the teachers, the malamdim, and the gavrichim, and one year he came back short, it wasn't successful his fundraising trip. So the question was, the money that he did come up with, who gets preference? The Avrichim or the teachers? So they went to Rav Salant at the time, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, and he paskened that the money that he does have has to go to the teachers, Malamdi. Why? Because teachers are considered workers. They're working for you. So you have a din, you have to pay your workers. And therefore, they get the Avrichim, they're not working, they're learning and they're getting supported. That's not called working. So you have to pay them, you promise, you have to pay them also, but they're second on the scale after the Malamdim who have a din of a worker. Amimela answered over here as well, that the money that the guy comes up with, if he doesn't come up with all the money, first things first, he has to pay back the rest of the 30,000 to the Gvir. Because that's business, right? He hired him to do business, and then that comes first. And then he has to, whatever left, or he has to continue and pay off the Avrichim after that. Okay. It says that Vivasir Yaakov Levado, right? He went across Nar Yabok to, Rashi says he forgot his Pachim Ktanim, his vessels of oil, and then he had the fight with the angel. So it's interesting because I just got a email this week from somebody asked me a shaila, and I remember saw it over here in the sefer. But he asked me why it says Yaakov left and he went, he was by himself, and it says no pasu vivaser Yaakov levado, he was by himself, he went back to get the pachim tanim by himself. So I was asked why did he go by himself? I mean, he wasn't like he was alone. He has no family with him. He has his all his kids. So why was he going alone? So I saw here brought down the name of Rav Chaim Zaitchik. He says in Eina Chanami, he said his sons, Yaakov's sons, should have gone with him. You know, you don't leave your father to go alone, but they didn't, and because of that, that's why they were usher to eat from the Gidon Asher. Right, the hind part of the animal, that's the best meat, the filet mignon, the best steaks come from the hind part. And we're not allowed to eat from the hind part, or the Gidon Asher is there. And that was a punishment because Yaakov went by himself and his sons didn't go accompany him. And it was an echanami, they did wrong. They should have accompanied their father when he went across. And because of that, to this day we can't eat the Gidon Asher. Brings here an interesting maisa. And Lagabe leaving people alone. It says, in the Mir Yeshiva, when it was in Lita, there was one evening, there was a group of Bachram there, and they were going back to where they were staying. And there was a Chashev Bachar, who stayed in a different place, and they were going to accompany him to his place, to his residence, where he was staying. So they were walking in the street, it was late at night, and all of a sudden they hear from behind them, like footsteps. So they got a little bit nervous, you know, it's dark and that, and they didn't know who it is, what it is. So they started, you know, picking up their steps and starting walking faster. All of a sudden they hear the steps behind them walking faster. And then they started running, and then they hear the people behind them starting running. So they realize they're being, attacked, chased, whatever. So they ran as fast as they could, and they all went to where the boys were staying, and to where they lived, and they quickly went in and shut the door. So a few minutes later, banging on the door, they saw the people who were chasing him were banging on the door. Says, who is it? So they said, open up, this is the police. Says, oh, police, okay. So they had no choice. They opened up the door. Sure enough, police are there. And they said, you guys are very lucky. He says, why? Because we saw you walking in the street, these people. We don't know who you were, it's dark. So we called out to you, but I guess you didn't hear us. And all of a sudden you started walking fast and running. So we started running after you. We thought you were some bunch of Ganavim or something. And we almost shot at you. We would have killed you. So you're just lucky that we happened to not shot at you. And you're very lucky, but they said, okay, now, they said, can we please see your identification papers, So the boys who lived there in that house, so they had it, but they were ushering this Chashev Bachar, he lived somewhere else, they just all ran there, he didn't have his Tuvet Zehut on him, his identification papers. So but he told the police, he says, I have, but I don't live here, I live, few blocks away, and have him over there. So the police said, fine, we'll go with you to there, and you'll show us the paper. So he said, okay. So they said bye to their friend, and the police took the Chashev Bachar and went to his house, showed him the papers, and that was the end of that. Next day in yeshiva, the Mashkiach calls all the Bachrim together, and he says, I'd like to speak to all the Bachrim. They all get it, what's going on? So the Mashkiach says, tells the Bachar, I was very close to closing down the yeshiva. So everybody's like, what? What happened? He says, yes, because of the maisa that happened yesterday with the identification papers or whatever, I was very close to, that's it, calling it quits, and it's closing down the yeshiva. Everybody, the Rebbeim, that's it. So they couldn't understand. What happened? Everything was nothing, no big deal. I mean, okay, then. So I thought maybe they didn't work because they weren't carrying their papers on them. I don't know, that's close to Shiva because I couldn't, what's going on? So he explained. He said, shots like this. He said, I heard what happened. I couldn't believe it. He says, the police came and they wanted to see the paper. They showed them the paper. And the Bacher didn't have papers, right? And he had to go to show with the police to his house. He says, how could these Bachram leave their friend alone? Can you imagine in a fray, all by himself, going with his Goyish policeman, who knows what's going to happen? How can they say goodbye, you know, see you later, have a good night? How could they do that? How can they leave their friend and go alone with the policeman and not escort him and accompany him and give him a chizuk? He said, I couldn't believe it. He said, I was ready to close the yeshiva. He says, because if you don't have a midos, then you know what's it all worth? What's the Torah all worth? So, being alone. V'yavo Yaakov shalem. Rashi says, what does it mean, shalem? Ka'adam omer lechavero yatsa ploni mibein shina arayos u'bashalem. Like someone who says, you know, this guy got out of the teeth of the tiger, lion, and he came out okay, unscathed. So afkan v'yavo shalem mipan anaram milavan l'meisa shenizdavgenu lo v'derech. So he came out untouched from the lions of Lavan and Esav, Yaakov came back shalom. So if you see Yidden that came out of the lion's den, i.e. the Holocaust, and they still kept their emunah, he says these people are very holy people. And as the Gedolei Tzaddikim say, that if you see anybody with a number on their arm, tattooed on their arm, he said that person is roy to go and ask him for a bracha. They're mamish, this person that, you know, what they went through, it's their brachas are makuya. Anyways, it brings here a maisa that there was a yid that before the war he was a gabbai in a shul, and after the war as well. He continued to be a gabbai for many years, and he was already getting, you know, old man already. But he continued with his gabbaut. He would get up early and open the shul and organize, all the sidurim and wash the floors and every day. And it was all for volunteer. So since he was getting older, the people in the some people in the community said, you know, maybe it's time you give the job to somebody younger than you that can, you know, you're getting older already. He said, no, nothing doing. No, I want the job. I don't want to give it up. And as much as they tried, they tried to convince him. He wouldn't hear of it. He's staying on as gabbai no matter what until he dies. So he said, okay, it's a chashuv job, but yeah, okay, so it's time to give it up. So he explained why. He said, before the war, I was a gabbai, and then came the Holocaust, and I was sent to a death camp. So, when I was in the camp, I was once caught doing this terrible, terrible crime of doing a mitzvah. I was doing a mitzvah, and they caught me doing a mitzvah. So they said, how can you do such a thing? And they say, it took me out, and you have to be, you're punishable by death. You're going to be hung. So they came where I was taken to the middle of the camp, and they called all the prisoners to watch. That was their shtick. They used to, whenever they killed somebody, they want everybody to learn their lesson of not to do this terrible thing of doing a mitzvah, and they used to call everybody to watch the execution. So they said, they brought me onto this stage in the middle of the camp. Everybody was there, and to watch me being hung. So I thought, okay, this is it. Yeah, it's all over. So they brought me on, put on the stage, and I stood on this stool, or whatever. And then he starts wrapping this rope or the noose around my neck. So I felt, at the time, and he said, you can't give up hope until, even if there's a sword on your neck, you can't give up hope. So I made a neder to Hashem, and I said, Hashem, if you get me out of this alive, I don't know how, but if you get me out of this alive, then I promise that just like I was a gabbai before the war, I'm going to be a gabbai after I get out of this Gehenim, and I'm going to stay a gabbai till the rest of them, until my dying day. That was my neder that I made. Anyways, the executioner, he put the nooses around my neck, so the only thing left to do was tighten the noose and to kick the stool from under me, and that's it. So, what happens? He's tightening the rope, and as he's tightening the rope breaks. So it never happens. The noose breaks, it just snapped. So when the people in charge, Germans, saw this, they took it as a sign that obviously not meant to be that I should be killed. And that was it. They let me out, and that was the end of that. And it was a short time later that the Americans came and they liberated the camp, and I was free. So of course I had to keep my neder, and the first community I found, I read it and went to the shul, and I said, I want to be the gabbai, and that's it. And that's why I haven't been the gabbai ever since. And now you're asking me, why I don't want to give up the job. That's why I don't want to give up the job. I have a promise to Hashem after saving my life. Okay, so one more thing. It's a maisa with a kid from America, and the Rav actually from America, and he told the following story to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. He said, there's a Yid in my Kehila back in America who, he comes to Daven Mamish 3 times a day, Shachris Mincha Maariv, Mamish Kedavening, but he's got a very weird syndrome. Says, what's that? He has this 10-minute late syndrome. Okay? He always comes 10 minutes late. So no matter when, Shachris is 7:30, he comes at 7:40. Maariv's at 8, comes at 8:10. Whenever it is, he comes, but always 10 minutes late. Always 10 minutes late, like a Kesader. So I approached him, I said, why don't you come on time? Always, no matter when it is, we make the meeting later, early, always 10 minutes, why can't you come on time? So he didn't listen. He wouldn't listen to me. He kept going. So I keep approaching the guy. I said, I don't understand you. So then he used to tell me, he says, Rabbi, do I come to davening? Yes. So what's the big deal? 10 minutes late, early, 10 minutes late. Lamaisa, I come to davening. So what's the big deal? 10 minutes. What do we do? So, okay, what can I do? I couldn't get through to the guy. One day, come to Shachri, says the Rav. The Siyid comes, he's on time. It's the first time he came on time for davening. So I approached him, I said, what's going on? Are you okay? You came on time today. Well, what? He said that Hashem showed me that I have to come on time. I said, what do you mean? He said, you know what happened last night? He says, no. He says, I have a business, like a big factory building, whatever I own. And all of a sudden, I get a call last night that the building's on fire. So I rush out to the building, and sure enough, it's like the fire just started or whatever on one side of the building, and it's that fire. So of course, media, I called the fire department, So I call fire department, I says, quick, my building's on fire, come. I said, where, the address, whatever. He says, don't worry, we'll be there in 1 minute. 1 minute. He says, oh great. So I'm standing here watching my thing in flames, and my building going in flames, oh my gosh. And look at my watch, a minute goes by, and the fire truck's not there. And I'm saying, what's going on? He said, it'd be here in a minute. 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, and my building's going burning more and more and more and more and more, right? Every second counts, and it's a fire spreading. 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 9 minutes. By now, my whole building was up in flames. That's it, it's gone. Finally, 10 minutes later, the fire truck pulls up. Okay, by now they're putting out a fire, but my that's it. My whole factory's gone kaput. So I came up to the guy in charge of the fire truck after. I said, "What's going on over here? I called you and I said you said you're going to be here in a minute, and it took you 10 minutes to get here." So you know what he answered me? He said, "We came, didn't we? So 10 minutes." We came. 10 minutes later, less. The mice we came, didn't we? So what? 10 minutes. He says, when I heard that, I said, that sounds familiar. I heard that statement somewhere before. Then he realized, yeah, that's why I've been telling the Rav all this year. You know, 10 minutes, I come to davening, wasn't it 10 minutes? So he said, I learned my lesson, what 10 minutes can be. So from that on, Sarat Hashem will come on time for davening. Shal Zoyche, to come on time for davening, Hashem should hear our tefillahs and bring with Mashiach Tzidkenu, we hear Yamin. Mm-hmm.